That's me. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. You sound like my lawyer.
I do? Is that good or bad? I feel like that's a bad thing.
Are you on speakerphone?
I am, because I do need to record this for the show.
Oh, right, of course. It's just like that speakerphone vibe, is it? Cozy up to the speaker.
Okay, I will. I'll get nice and close for you. Just for you, though, okay? So we got, like, 20 minutes?
Yep. All right.
Awesome.
I'll set my timer. Actually, you know what? The guy's going to call, so he'll call in, like, a half hour.
All right. I'll be quick, I promise, all right? I value your time. And thank you in advance so much for calling in today.
That was my pleasure. So, wait, this is for what? Boston?
Yes, Rock This Way. Boston University.
WTBU. Now, I'm trying to remember, the very first time I was ever on the radio, I think it was Boston University's radio station, was it formerly WTBS, and then TBS bought the call letters TBS?
I honestly don't think so, but I could be wrong. I know we have changed our name. I think it was BUR at one point.
BUR, of course.
There you go.
I think it might have even been a chain before then. But anyway, it's great to be back on the air in Boston.
Oh, yes. And we're great. We're very grateful to have you. So, starting off, so even though I know how Dial-A-Song started, why don't you tell everybody the history? Because I am sure they would much rather hear it from you than from me.
Well, I'll try to make it short, because it's sort of a shaggy dog tale. Basically, in the early 80s, phone machines were emerging technology. I mean, if you think of all the excitement that people have around, like, smartphones or any kind of internet thing, it was really a fad. There was this moment where it seemed like everyone you knew in New York City was getting a phone machine. And if you knew, like, people who, a lot of people had, you know, what do you call it, like, had answering services.
Right.
They had services who would take messages for them. And if you were an actor or somebody who had some kind of, like, itinerant job, you would just have a service. That was really common. Like, you know, session musicians I knew had services. And then switched over to phone machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had sort of got this notion that we could kind of promote the band, sort of do this musical project with a phone machine, and it would just be another kind of creative outlet and get the word out about the band. I mean, we were seriously unknown at the time. And the thing is, we were playing in discos and nightclubs that were really catered to a late night crowd. Like, it was a very performance-y kind of oriented thing, and it's very druggy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole downtown scene was extremely kind of club oriented. So a lot of the acts were transgressive, and a lot of the acts were very much into, like, sort of shock value stuff. And we weren't particularly shocking, so it was an interesting way to sort of get the word out for us that would kind of get it to people who had, like, regular jobs or who might not otherwise be predisposed to go out into Manhattan in the middle of the night. So we basically put this phone line up on the back page of the Village Voice in their classified section, and just said, like, you know, it was originally called Dial a Machine,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, kind of confusing, but it also points out how new the idea of machines answering phone calls was. I mean, that was a very novel idea, which is something that's sort of hard to imagine now. I mean, we live in telephony is such a multi-layered thing now. I mean, this was before fax machines. It's really like prehistoric.
Wow.
But anyway, it basically took off in Manhattan, and we became kind of known as the people who did that thing. You know, and it was a. It was a good way to kind of start the band, I think. It, because there's so many, I mean, most of the ways that bands are, you know, become established are so orthodox. You know, they're it's, you know, you get kind of picked to open for some other band, or, you know, the ways of the world are very, like, sort of tired when it comes to bands getting launched.
Right.
And this was a really good entree for us. It was just very easy. I mean, the thing we're doing now with Dial a Song, where we're posting a new song online every week, in many ways, it's in the same spirit as the original, in that it's kind of like a, you know, it's like a, you know, a He-Man songwriting contest, but, you know, it's just all you can write buffet, but the stakes are really different, you know. I mean, we have an established audience for what we do, and also just the ways of the web, everything gets critiqued so much. I mean, one thing that was very pleasant about the original Dial Phone service was that it was so, it just completely didn't matter what it was, you know. I mean, it was very liberating to have both to be tasked with the, you know, responsibility of kind of feeding this creative enterprise, but also having the stakes being so low, you know.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of fun, you know, whereas the thing we're doing now, it's fun, but it also feels like, you know, all the comments are, you know, immediately the comments are, I liked last week's song more, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's that whole, like, internet Hail Caesar routine where it's like, thumbs down, kill him, you know. So I don't know how to respond to that kind of stuff, but at the same time, it's an interesting, I think it's great. I'm really happy that we're doing this thing now. I think it's pretty, pretty exciting, actually.
I mean, it's grown so much. Like, now you guys have an app for it, right?
Yep, there's a TMBG music streaming app. I mean, that actually came out before we started this project, but it sort of has a renewed life now.
I mean, but you would have never expected that in the 80s, you know? It just evolved.
I wouldn't have expected cheap long-distance phone calls in the 80s.
And, you know, it's funny listening to what you have to say is that how it's so unorthodox. And, I mean, you guys aren't an orthodox band, so it just makes sense that this is the thing that really, you know, puts you on the map and establishes yourselves. I don't know. That just struck me as really funny.
I mean, it was a strange move, and in some ways, it was sort of it probably. I mean, one thing that I've come to realize as, like, it gets written up now and kind of gets dipped in amber as, like, a sort of like a rock history thing. Mm-hmm. The thing that does strike me as strange is people keep on talking about what a good, like, marketing campaign it was, or what a good branding campaign it was. And insofar as it helped us connect with people who might be interested in what we're doing, like, it's like the function follows the form in a way. Like, the idea of, like, checking out a band in this left field kind of way complemented the kind of stuff that we were trying to do as a band, but I have to say, like, one thing that's strange about the time we live in now is how distant we already are from the major label era. I mean, people don't realize how little regard the record companies, even independent record companies, had back then for DIY projects. Like the whole record companies didn't want your help in terms of like imaging your band.
Right.
They didn't mind you being like a little bit notorious or a little bit famous, but they really didn't want it to be like a closed book. Like, they actually wanted to be part. They really wanted to get in there and sort of, like, their expertise was marketing, not, you know, they don't write songs. You guys write songs, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. they really want to leave the, like, perception and the profiling to their team of, you know, experts. And the thing that was funny about the Dial Song thing is how quickly it established us as kind of small time in the minds of record companies. Mm-hmm. Like to them, it just seemed like sort of a catastrophe. Like I think it actually, and I don't think they were necessarily wrong. I think it sort of introduced us as being too available somehow. We lost some mystery, which is something that they really used. And that was definitely one of the quills in there, feathers in there. Remember that expression?
Hey.
Yeah, when you're trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say.
that was definitely one of their tricks, and we didn't have a lot of mystery. Like, we really kind of just met the world over in the corner with open arms. We were just like, hey, you know, want to check this out? Check this out. And it was very egalitarian.
Right. And now, this time around, you have one for every week of the year.
Uh-huh.
And so I have a fan question.
Yep.
Rev from right here in Boston asks, do you have all 52 songs done, or are there some for the later months?
No, I mean, I'm sitting in front of my computer and with my guitar to my right, and as soon as these interviews stop, I've got to, like, figure out. I'm sort of tasked with I've kind of record a couple of demos this weekend, so we're recording with the band next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now we have to put the songs in with iTunes like a month and a half in advance.
Right.
For them to post properly. And we're making videos for a lot of these songs, so we also need a little bit of, like, lead time between, you know, getting them wrapped up, getting the recordings wrapped up and getting the videos made. No, it's not all, it's certainly not all done. I really wish it was all done, because it would be... It would be a lot less stress. I mean, we're actually going on tour in April across the U.S., and the notion of having to get stuff in for Dial-A-Song while we're on the road is really daunting. Because, I mean, the road is not a hospitable place for any kind of creative enterprise. I mean, we're just except for the show. I mean, we just live to do the show. Everything else is like just kind of sitting in laundromats. And,
right. It's the stuff in between the shows. It's just nothing special.
So we'd like to get more of a jump on it. I mean, my biggest fear is that the first couple of months are going to be really good, and then it's just going to get really, really tame. But I can tell you it's going to be really solid until April, and then we'll see what happens after that.
You know what? I have faith. I have faith.
I hope so. Well, it just takes work. It just takes work. You know, I mean, we've got some, you know, some good songs, but we just need to have some great songs.
I mean, you guys have been around long enough. You know how to hustle. So
yeah. Well, it just takes work. You know, I mean, that's it. You really, if you just work at it, something will happen.
Yeah. Now, do you have to do all of the station IDs for the Dial-A-Song by yourself? Did you have to do all of those?
I don't know if it's John. I don't know if John's done some or not. I mean, I just did the ones that were sent to me.
How many were sent to you? Ballpark.
Oh, I think I've only done like 40 or something like that. I'm how many stations? There's like 120 stations or something like
that. Yeah. Okay. So you haven't had to do all of them. I know you did ours.
Good.
What do you do if like a station name doesn't like lend itself to like singing it?
Oh, well, I mean, some of them don't. those things are just kind of a marathon. When we do things like that, we just, like, have to get a really enormous cup of coffee and just kind of hit record and say it as fast as we can until it's done. I mean, what's the ID like for your station? I don't. How did it?
You kind of just like. I'll send it to you after. You kind of just sing like our name, and it kind of sounds like you made it up as you went, but it sounds good.
Oh, good. But I'm sure I made it up as I went.
But I can't imagine like if like the DJ names were long, because it's, you know, it's just DJ V and DJ Sarah, so that's like short, and Rock This Way, that's short. But like going through the list of all the different stations, some of them, like, you know, the show names are really long, and I'm like, how do you make a song out of that? Like,
well, it might not be a very good song, but, you know, I mean, this is coming from a guy in a band called They Might Be Giants, so I mean, we can't really, you know, we can't complain about names being too long.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point.
Although I guess there are like much more ponderously long name band names than ours now.
That's the thing, to have a long name.
Do what?
That's like the thing now, is to have like a really long name.
Really?
Yeah.
when we were naming ourselves, I remember there was a very real moment where. And maybe I was just into this name, but it was either They Might Be Giants or Dump Truck.
Dump Truck?
And it turns out, like, there ended up being, there was a band from Boston called Dump Truck.
Oh.
When a friend got up to show, I actually put together two posters for the show just to, like, look at them on the wall and see which one worked better. And we went with They Might Be Giants, but I'm really actually kind of glad that we didn't call ourselves Dump Truck, just because then we'd have to do that weird thing where it was like we'd be like Dump Truck UK or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
We'd be in like a band feud before anybody even knew who we were.
Yeah.
I guess that happened to REM. I think REM. There was another band called REM, which is, well, there's a long history of bands having the same name. I mean, it's funny, like, Dinosaur Jr. is Dinosaur Jr. because there was a band called Dinosaur.
Yeah.
And Superchunk was called Superchunk because there was a band called Chunk. They were originally called Chunk. And what's funny is that both, I feel like Dinosaur Jr. is such a better name than Dinosaur, and Superchunk is such a better name than Chunk.
I guess, you know, they had to improvise, and it just turned out better.
Yeah. But I guess somebody probably thinks that, like, we named ourselves Giant and then changed it. But,
well, now everyone's going to know the truth, so.
Yeah. The horrible, horrible truth.
Yeah, no, it's not horrible. It's a good story. I like They Might Be Giants better than Dump Truck, so there's that.
Yeah, it's a more original name. It's a little ponderous.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. The best part about being named They Might Be Giants is that there was this weird thing in the CBGB ad in the 80s and 90s. This kind of democratic thing that they did, that if you were playing there during the week, there was no such thing as a headliner during the week. They would have like three bands on in a night, and officially no band was bigger or smaller than any other band, so your name would always appear in the same sized font
mm-hmm.
in the ad. So if you had a really long name, it looked like you were a really big deal in the CBGB ad. So, you know, that really played in our favor. I mean, we really stuck out in that ad. And that was a very public place to have your name. Even if I feel like there were a million bands that I never saw, but I know about because of the CBGB ad. It was such a tracked thing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I have another fan question.
Oh, yeah.
So Dylan Medina from Providence asks, have you ever done any solo work?
Yeah, I did a side project with a couple friends of mine called Monopuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like me by myself, but I'm not really like a singer-songwriter guy. I'm like more of a band guy.
Uh-huh.
But Yeah, I did this thing. It was in the late 90s. Both John did a solo album called State Songs, and I did a couple of albums with these Monopuff guys, and it was a lot of fun. It was like very, it was very funky. It was very rhythmic. Like, it was much more, the whole sort of a point of departure for the band was that we were doing much more groove-based stuff, which was probably the only real uncharted territory for They Might Be Giants. And it had I think it actually had sort of an effect on us, on the work that John and I did, which is it sort of introduced a way to do more groove-based stuff. And it's funny, we were probably the only people working with drum machines in the 80s who weren't preoccupied with grooves. But, it just wasn't where we were at, but there's a lot of stuff going on that was cool that way, and I just felt like I wanted to kind of get deeper into it, and so it allowed some space for that, and that was cool.
But, you know, that's just a side project.
Yeah,
BG,
yeah.
That's where your heart is.
Oh, yeah. It's my job.
Yeah. That must be pretty cool. Yeah, that's my job.
Yeah. Well, it is a job. I mean, you know, we have in the band when we're doing something that's slightly miserable, or, you know, like the timing is bad, or it just goes on forever, which is pretty frequent. We will often say to one another when, like, somebody's kind of groaning, we'll just say, "Well, you wanted to be in a band." And I mean, that's the thing about any kind of job, is that, you know, you get to do what you want. You know, if you're doing a professional job, like, you know, you get to do what you want, but you often have to do it more than you want to. But, yeah, that's sort of the way it goes.
All right, and I only have one more question for you.
Excellent.
And it's my favorite. Would you rather be a giant or a paleontologist?
Oh, I think I would rather be a paleontologist. Well, you know, there's actually one thing we discovered since that song came out, the I Am a Paleontologist song, which was written by our bass player, Danny Weinkopf. It's a really excellent song and very, very popular with people. Very catchy.
Catchy.
You know, one thing that we've sort of discovered is among that paleontologists are not archaeologists. It's a different gig. And one thing, you know, people tend to think that paleontologists are out in the field digging stuff up, when in fact, I guess, and I hope I have this right, please send your angry emails to anybody else but me. But I think paleontologists are really scientists. Like, it's like being a clinical psychologist is somebody who's studying the ideas behind psychology. Being a paleontologist is somebody who's studying the fruits of anthropology. In other words, they're not out in the field like dusting off bones and shaking things out of rock.
Right.
They're looking at the stuff that's been assembled by all that hard work and trying to figure out what the truth of the evidence is. So they're not really they're not out in the field. That is the thing that people make. That's the mistake that we made in the video. And that's the mistake that is that sort of the mistake that's kind of baked into the song. Maybe the song should really be called "I Am an Anthropologist."
No, or, it doesn't have the same ring.
An archaeologist. Excuse me. It's really the term. Those are the people who are digging out of the dirt.
Well, look at that. Nice little science lesson end it up.
Yes. Well, the more you know. Yes. So I got another call coming in 3 minutes, so I should jump because I got to get another cup of coffee in me.
All right, that's perfect timing.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your interest. This has been really pleasant, and I wish they were all like this.
I would think that people would all be this nice, but I mean...
people are nice, but a lot of times they're kind of boring in the way that they're nice, so...
Oh, well, you know what?
Just between you you and me.
Okay. Well, likewise.
Talk to you later.
It was a pleasure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, John. Bye-bye.